Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to the Capitol. First and foremost, I'd like to thank Minnesotans for participating in the democracy in such high numbers. Thanks for believing in our democracy. And a special thank you to the long hours that were put in preparing for this election cycle by those professionals, by the volunteer poll workers, and the election judges. Our democracy is predicated on our free, fair, and secure elections. And here in Minnesota, once again, Minnesotans showed that it is a priority of theirs. So I'm incredibly grateful. We're here today because this is the first day of our second term, and the work starts. Be very clear, it's been the privilege of a lifetime and an honor to have the trust of Minnesotans over four very challenging years. And to have the opportunity to come back here is humbling. And I also know last night's vote was not just a pat on the back. It was a mission order going forward. It was about a vision about what we can do. Minnesotans were very clear about this. They're deeply concerned, make sure they're able to make their own healthcare decisions. They also were very clear that they trust and believe in the system of our democracy, and defending it is critical. They believe in the right to collectively bargain, to create a strong middle class. And I think more than anything, they believed in a hopeful vision of Minnesota, where we know things can be divisive, and we know we don't always agree on all the issues, but we should try and work together to solve those. So I think it was critically important and grateful that the people of Minnesota validated that. You need to run for something. You need to say what you're going to do. We were tasked with governing the state of Minnesota, and there were things from a global pandemic to a long overdue reckoning on social justice, to global economic uncertainty. And those are the things we do. But providing that vision of why we asked Minnesotans to support us the first time, making sure this was the best state in the country to raise a child, making sure we were investing in the Minnesota that we know and love, means investing in education, investing in infrastructure. So I have to tell you, now is the time for us to get back to work. And as I've said it when I came here, Lieutenant Governor and I have consistently said this. And over the last 4 years, we needed to, because of divided legislature, to work in a collaborative manner to compromise to get things done. And I'll say it again today, I will work with anyone who is willing to help make things better for Minnesota. And this vote and the results of that is very clear what Minnesotans want to see us do. And I think first and foremost, Minnesotans want to make sure that we're working together to make sure every Minnesotan feels safe in their community. We have the capacity to do that. We need to work together to find ways to ease the inflationary pains that are falling on families. Not mythical slogans, but returning money to their pockets, reducing property taxes in ways that are meaningful, figuring out ways that you can impact them, continuing to create the good jobs that we've done, continuing to make sure that everyone has an opportunity for a sustainable job that can support their family. Those are the things we can do to help the families. And then, as we've said, and now we get an opportunity over the next 4 years, I came into this job wanting and saying that education is the foundation of everything Minnesota has done and will do, and making sure that we are giving every single child and every single Minnesotan in their lifelong growth around education an opportunity by fully funding those opportunities and easing the cost to families because of the investment it makes in Minnesota. So the good news is, we've got a plan to do that already. The really good news is Minnesota's state finances are in as solid a position as maybe they've ever been, and we are sitting on one of the largest surpluses per capita of any place in the country. That gives us an opportunity to do those things, make communities safe, invest in people to make sure we reduce the pains of inflation, invest in education. All of the things that we talked about on the campaign, we have the capacity to do that. So the sense of hopefulness and optimism that I feel is not just from winning an election. It's a validation of how we won this election and the things we talked about. By rejecting a negative, divisive view of Minnesotan and choosing that one Minnesota is not a slogan. It's the true belief that we can work across differences and that there's plenty of room in this state and opportunities for people to live the lives that they choose and to thrive in doing that. And that's an exciting time. So we're here today and we'll be leaving this in just a little while. I'll be meeting with the cabinet to talk about the second term, and then we'll be meeting with senior staff. I've already spoken with House leadership in Speaker Hortman this morning, received contact from Senator Miller early this morning too, in the form of a voicemail, and we'll see what Senate leadership is going to look like as we all start to collaborative work together to prove Minnesota on that path that they spoke loud and clear that they want to see. A one Minnesota that invests in our children, that makes our communities safe, that's innovative around climate change, that makes sure we protect people's rights to make their own healthcare decisions, and we think about what the future is going to look like to make this the best state in the country to live in. So I'm deeply humbled. We slept for a couple of hours, as we said, and now the work starts. And my team, I'm gonna give another shout out to them. They have been working for months working on that budget. You can look at the budget that we released last year to get a pretty good idea of the direction we're going to go. You can look at those things that we said we wanted to get done. We are going to do that. And I think all of us in this room, that it looks like things are shaking out officially on this, there's a change dynamic here now. We're not going to see things that Minnesotans need be stalled. We're going to see things that are able to move forward. And I think working collaboratively, those who want to be a part of that, this can be an exciting and gratifying time, and we can lift Minnesotans up. So I think after some very hard years and an economic instability that's not quite settled yet, Minnesotans and Minnesota state government has the capacity to make that so much easier on folks, and now we can get that done. So just grateful, have to been on this journey. We're now 2-0 together. So Lieutenant Governor Flanagan.
Thank you so much, Governor. Well, good morning, everybody. Good morning, Minnesota. Thank you. It is the absolute honor of the lifetime to be able to enter into a second term as your Lieutenant Governor and on this team. Last night, Minnesota chose a positive vision and compassion and hope. They chose a future that included and lifted up all of us together. They chose to be good neighbors. Governor Walz and I have always been clear about our vision for Minnesota. As you heard him say, it's one Minnesota. It's about working across lines of difference to find common ground and solutions to the problems that we all face. In the last 4 years, we have made insulin more affordable and accessible. We've invested in our children and in our schools. We established a nation-leading Office of Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives. We passed groundbreaking infant and maternal health programs, and we're going to keep doing good work together. We keep moving forward, investing in public safety, education, infrastructure, and the things that make Minnesota, Minnesota. Although I couldn't be happier to have another 4 years with my favorite coworker, I know that Governor Walz and I could not have done this work alone. We work with our fellow constitutional officers and our partners in the legislature. We work with the thousands of state employees who come to work every single day, dedicated to public service, to do the right thing for Minnesotans. And we work with and all communities of Minnesota. Minnesota is strong and resilient because of the people who live here and because of this place. And I can't wait to see what we do together. Thank you.
Thanks, LG. And before I take questions, just to make it clear that we understand what our responsibility is in this office to serve all Minnesotans. And to be clear, of those of you listening, that means folks, whether they voted for us or not, means folks that don't necessarily agree with where we're at. But in a nation where we're seeing, if we can't find common ground, if we can't agreeably disagree, if we can't show a little grace to one another, it becomes very difficult to govern, and society becomes very tense. And I think for us to understand making the case that that we want to make sure that those voices are heard, we want to make sure that we're clearly articulating the issues and why we're pursuing some of these policies, and then working to make sure that that is serving the vast majority of Minnesotans. So with that, we'd be glad to take questions.
Governor, you repeatedly mentioned that this is your second term. We don't have term limits. We don't have a
term. Thank you, everybody.
Yeah. I'm just going to, on my 2 hours of sleep that I have been saying, I was walking around saying, well, I'm 9-0 now, and that seems pretty good place to be. So, we'll just get through these next few weeks and get moving. So,
Governor, what does an all-DFL state government mean for issues like the Social Security income tax, education funding, paid family leave, and the rebate checks that you've talked about a lot on the campaign trail in last session?
Yeah, and again, I want to not get too far ahead, and we'll, you know, continue our, which I think is a great tradition, and I hope the press corps here would, of being accessible and trying to answer those. We're just getting started thinking about this. In fact, it was, you know, around 3 a.m. when Leader Lopez Franson texted me and indicated that it looked like that would be the case. I think what I would say is the resistance to some of these proposals that are very popular in Minnesota have a much better chance of going through. But I think Lieutenant Governor articulated this pretty clearly. We're one piece of this. We work with our legislative partners. We work with the constituents. But I think you could see we were very clear during the campaign that we believe very strongly in fully funding education. That'll be a priority. So I think it probably means at least we're going to discuss these things. And I'll just mention things like, you know, we talked about red flag laws on gun safety and those types of things. We can at least have some hearings and talk these out. So I want the legislative process to work the way it's supposed to, work with them. And that means all members trying to bring forward.
And are the rebate checks, though, still on the table? You've pushed for that hard on the campaign trail.
Yeah, and we'll work with the legislature on this. I did work on the campaign trail, and I do think it would ease folks' burdens in inflation, you know, the pressures they're feeling on inflation. So on this one, I think it's something that we're definitely going to talk about. I'll definitely bring to the table and make the case with our partners in the legislature that that is something to put out there. I think a holistic plan on how we do this, making sure our budget continues to be balanced. I mean, that's the story in this. There are a lot of things swirling in this campaign. Many of you have covered campaigns for a long time, especially for governor. The basic milestones you got to do is you got to balance the budget. You've got to not create deficits. You've got to make sure that you're doing those things correctly. And I think we did that. We'll continue to.
There have been several crises.
Are you still thinking about a special session on public safety here yet this year?
And certainly around public safety. We haven't talked yet. And I know that this morning there were some folks on the legislative side mentioned that there was some conversation going on. I haven't spoken specifically on that. I think this is one to get our feet on the ground. I'll go meet with my commissioners, my senior staff, and talk about what's next. I want to be very clear, though. We were very adamant during the campaign that we had a very robust, nearly $400+ million plan dealing and especially dealing with mayors to try and get them the help. So I'm going to leave it on that one that there's conversations to happen, but we are committed to making sure, especially the way I think our plan approach this, trusting the local leadership in this and getting them the resources to make the decisions they need.
There have been crises that you've had to handle in your first term. Assuming there aren't for the second term, how will the second term look and feel different?
Well, when you're talking about me, I think we could probably assume there may be. The first term has thrown stuff at us. I think the biggest thing from that is we've learned so much. And I think, again, not that everything gets perfect, and I keep talking about that, but I think the one thing, if you go back and look, when things didn't go as perfectly as they should have, the next time you see the similar event came up, there's a much improved response. And I think one of those things is that we started out is that those are things we can continue to implement. We continued to govern throughout this entire campaign. And you don't get to pick and you don't get to complain about the hand you're dealt. That's what leadership means. I think the biggest thing of dealing with these crises on the scale that we dealt with, that we're very, very nimble and flexible on moving on other things that we want to continue on. So assuming we continue to manage these things and we don't know what's going to be thrown at us, because even thinking about this, just some of the things that got forgotten during this time, the avian flu outbreak was a huge threat to our agricultural prosperity. And our teams learned so much from the 2015 outbreak and implemented that. So I think what you're going to see is that move to that we talked about, more forward-facing dashboard type governance, more of an ability to be flexible and move things. I'm again very proud. It was seems like a lifetime ago in 2019, we moved on the Minlar system and were able to repair that. And we've seen that there's been some glitches on other things. We'll keep moving on. So I'm excited about that prospect. I'm excited about moving towards that more efficiency and outcome based results. So
question for the turnover. What kind of turnover do you expect in the cabinet, if any, and are you interested in doing some administrative changes such as breaking up Department of Human Services?
Yeah, no thoughts on that yet. Again, I'm going to go meet with this this cabinet right now as soon as we finish here, and we'll start talking about that. These are individual choices with folks too. This issue about the cabinet structure and everything, I think is a very legitimate one, especially with DHS, the size, some of the things we learned. So I would leave it at this. We are open to working together with folks on those discussions. We haven't proposed anything or put anything forward at this time, but just getting started now, and now is the time. So I expect the cabinet will have those conversations.
So, I know you said that you want to work with the legislatures, you know, see what their priorities are. But are there other pieces of unfinished business of your agenda that you would like to see quick action on in January, you know, beyond public safety stuff that was on the cutting room floor?
That's a good point. And I say this, and I don't think it was naive. I would characterize it as more optimistic. And I know there were those who said when I first came in and I had experience with the lieutenant governor, was more experienced in state governance, that some of you were very skeptical, and maybe rightfully so, when I said, I think there's things we can get done early on. We can get these things done early on, agree on, clear them off the table. That is very difficult, just to acknowledge. That has been very difficult. So I think I'm not jaded on it. I'm more realistic. The only thing I would say is that there is a new dynamic here in terms of a Senate that is not trying to stall an agenda as much as one's trying to move one. So I would leave it open. I think you should deal with things as they are. I don't think you should view this that we have to play that, you know, May 24th, 3 a.m. shuttle diplomacy or whatever. And I get legislators work that way in deliberative bodies, but I would hope we could come together on this. And I would stress what I think all of you said. I think there's an urgency around some public safety support, and I think there's an urgency around fighting some inflationary pressures. So I'm open to trying to do that, but I am never going to pretend that I know the speed of the legislature now, and the lieutenant governor reminds me of that often, and they will move at the speed they are, and they are a separate branch, and they have every right to do so. So yeah, I got Theo in the back.
You expected to win last night. That was clear over the last week of the campaign. Did you expect to have this trifecta?
I thought there was an outside chance. I think candidly with you, I think the things went better. What I had been saying, and I think you have to be careful in this, and you get a feeling of doing this a lot of times, you could see the data, and you know we don't release anything, but we had a pretty good feeling of where things were at for our race. But there is the intangible of these that was growing, and I have to tell you, over the last few weeks, there were movements. I came back and told my team what I saw in Winona in that area. I said, I haven't seen that since my race in 2006, just kind of the energy. I said, and this is one thing too, the quality of the candidates that we were running was amazing, and the work that they were doing. So I was going and assisting with these door knocks, but a lot of that was our campaign assisting local campaigns that were doing a lot of that. So I thought there was a possibility, but I think most of us, and this is for all of us to digest, there was a flood of polls that have proved to be, I don't know who's going to buy their polls now. They were so radically off, but they changed the national narrative that this thing was super close, that it was leaning this way. And I think, you know, obviously that's a strategy. I think for us, staying in our lane, knowing where we're at, knowing that our message was resonating with Minnesotans, but it's hard to tell on individual House and Senate districts how that was going to work. I'll go here and then back to Tom.
Okay.
Yep. I know you don't govern by Twitter, but on Twitter, a lot of people are asking about Social Security, income tax, legalizing sports betting, and legalizing marijuana. Where are those going to fit on your agenda?
They're all things I've supported, and I think, you know, the devil's in the details on some of them. I think we get them, but I've said I support all those. I think those are things that there should be some agreement on. Again, we came in 2019 and lifted that cap on Social Security. I think there's a lot of common ground here. I mean, I'm just going to lay it out there. We had this. We agreed to a deal that was pretty good in May, and I think the move to walk away believing the other side was going to get the trifecta, and that's why they didn't take it. There were a lot of things in there that I agreed to. I think the Republican legislators should assume I'm certainly open to working with them on many of these things, and it wasn't, these were not exclusively Republican ideas. So I think on the three things you brought up, Tom, I've been supportive of those, and I think, again, especially on the cannabis legalization, adult use, that was simply the Senate stalling on that and not doing anything. I would assume now that there may be more of a desire.
Governor, what's the message?
Last time you had the trifecta, followed the marriage amendment by the unified Republican legislature. If you want to keep this, how do you keep that from happening again? How do you keep from overshooting and losing?
Those are conversations we'll have. And I think the way I've always said this is that you listen to the will of the people. You move things forward that the people believe will help them. You be thoughtful about it. And I think my statement here, I'm going to have to be, I recognize this. We won, and I think a solid victory. But I've always said this. I care about that percentage that did not vote for me because they belong to this state, and obviously they're dissatisfied about something. So I think the one biggest thing is just listening to where the public's at and delivering on some of those things that that everybody feels like they're benefiting from. Mary, and then I'll go back.
How important was the abortion issue, and do you want a bill on your desk to codify it, Senate Democrats?
Yeah, I think it makes sense. I don't think you should depend on the election. I think all of us would be naive to not think. We knew in late June when the Dobbs decision came down that it was horrific. It was horrifically dangerous for women. And I think we were very clear about staying in that. I think a lot of people made the assumption that people forgot about it or no longer had the same impact that it had. No one forgot about it. And so I think it was really big. And I think the contrast couldn't have been bigger in the two candidates. So I think it played a big role. But it kind of set the tone on where we're at. I mean, there's the irony of this is this is about personal medical freedoms, but we've been talking about protecting those things, and the message on the other side was not that. So
the Dr. Jensen brought up the Columbus statue over and over again on the campaign trail, and he was going to put it back up on day one. That's not going to happen. Could Lieutenant Governor talk about what the status is of the Cap Board and all that stuff?
So we are, I'm so glad you asked, John. We are currently in the process of rulemaking through the CAP board, and folks should expect an update on that in the next couple months or so. We went through an entire process, and once that process is finished, then we'll know how we will be addressing any statues, any monuments. We'll have rules that we can all work with. But just to be clear, the folks who worked on that together looked like Minnesota. We were so intentional to make sure that those task forces really reflected one Minnesota, if I can say that. I think we went through a really thoughtful process, and having the administrative law judge help us with that, I think folks can feel really proud of that work, and we'll get to that soon.
Right, got one more.
Across the country and here in Minnesota, Gen Z came out to vote. How do you ensure as a team that Gen Z is spoken to, that Gen Z is taken care of, and that they become a part of the process that eventually you won't be a part of?
Yeah, this is for us, I think, probably the most encouraging. We've all been through this, and the modeling numbers, and we hear how to get out the youth vote, how do you get out the youth vote? And it seems like the older generations are always disappointed. The younger generation did turn out in numbers. This looks to be different, but it was not just the voting numbers, it was the showing up at events and the vocalization of what they were looking for. And I said, for many of us, it's so encouraging because their message is one of inclusion. Their message is one of tolerance. And this is the generation that was in high school and entering college that went through the turbulence of COVID and watched George Floyd. And I watched them with the sense of optimism of continuing to participate. So I think, you know, in answering your question, is we need to make sure that we're engaging them in the real decision making, making sure that they're setting in rooms where those decisions are made, where they feel like it matters, and delivering on the issues that they talked about. Certainly they came out on issues around choice. They certainly did that. But I think it's more than that. And I think, again, I would ask all of us, what came out of last night, not just Democrats doing better than they were supposed to, but there's a lot of optimism in our system. It feels like there was very little talk of elections being rigged, very little talk, very gracious folks across the country in concession speeches, to, you know, saying they're going to help one another to get this done. And I think Gen Z's watching this, get them involved, get them engaged. And we're seeing them. I mean, we saw some of them pretty close to Gen Zers enter the Minnesota legislature and the Senate. And we've got a bright future, and we need to make sure that they're there. We need to hear them. They're not going to just take, platitudes around climate change. They want to see things happen. This matters to them because they know they're going to be around for it. So I'm actually, the takeaways from that was super encouraging. The democracy is strong. People still care. There was decorum in this. There was not violence. We saw a lot of young people participating. I think the things we've gone through, this feels really hopeful to me that we're maybe at a bit of a transition point. And again, I'm not naive. We'll see. There'll be, I'm sure, announcements for president coming now, because for all of you, this is your last day, and then the presidential election starts tomorrow. People will start announcing, they'll start running, we'll be going into that. And if we have our way, Minnesota will replace Iowa as being one of those very first states so that we can have a say in how that works and that that can come here. And so I think that the takeaway, obviously you're always more optimistic when you win elections, but I think one way or another for folks that this election came off with a lot of energy, a lot of participation, not a lot of distractions, not a lot of naysaying, and that I think Gen Z will take a lot from too. So I'm excited about it. But thank you all. We're going to be here a lot with you.
Can I do a related question, Lieutenant Governor, on the diversity? You served in the Minnesota House in a legislature that wasn't very diverse. There's record diversity, women, women of color, LGBTQ lawmakers coming in. Can you talk about what that will mean?
I think it means everything. I think the new voices that are coming into the Minnesota legislature means that our democracy will function better. When the folks who represent us more accurately reflect the community, that's good for all of us. I watched some of these candidates who were in incredibly safe seats, who just were out on the doors every single day. Zainab Mohammed, in particular, has worked incredibly hard. She is going to be a showstopper. And I am very encouraged. The People of Color and Indigenous Caucus gets bigger and bigger every cycle. I am so proud to have been a founder of that caucus, and I cannot wait to see how it changes the conversations that we've had here. We've already seen it. We've already seen it in budget negotiations and in leadership, and I think now the real opportunity is for members to build relationships and listen to these new voices who are bringing a really important perspective. So I'm excited. I hope there's a little maybe auntie status and I was able to hold the door open for some of these young people. But you know, I think part of the Gen Z turnout was also our young people seeing themselves reflected in a lot of these candidates. Yeah. And the things that I heard when I was talking to young people, people who had registered for the first time, in particular because of the issue of abortion and because of LGBTQ plus rights, those were the two things that I heard consistently from young people. So now I think there's a clear message here from Gen Z that we've got work to do. We've had really intentional ways that we've incorporated the voices of young people into our administration, like the Young Women's Initiative. We work closely with youth in government. And I think now that we are going into our second term, there's so much opportunity for us to just be in community and building relationships and listening directly to people who are impacted by the decisions we make in this building every day.
So Governor, you won, Keith Ellison won, Mary Moriarty won. Was crime overstated as a campaign issue?
I just think there weren't the solutions put out there, and I think the public understands this. The crime's a complex issue, and I don't think they think there's an easy fix on this. I want to just be very clear that crime and violent crime being up is unacceptable. It's unacceptable today after the campaign. You're not going to hear us not talking about it, but I think it was oversimplified, and I think a lot of Minnesotans said, well, pointing out that problem without offering a solution does us nothing. And I think that was probably the biggest difference. But I want to be very clear. I heard it from people throughout this whole campaign. They were concerned about it, but they're concerned about solutions, and they're concerned about a holistic kind of balanced approach to it. So I think that's where it was at. It was a campaign issue. It just wasn't as simple as saying they don't care about crime and we're going to fix it with no plan. People don't believe that. They know we all care about this, and we have to have a good plan to solve it. So thank you all.